Okay, let's begin by praying to God. Great God in heaven, we thank you for this evening, and we're glad that you always take care of us. Thank you for watching over us, and we know that you're always there when trouble comes. And we ask you, dear God, that you would be with our brethren at the West Freeway Church in Fort Worth, Texas, who just a couple days ago experienced a great tragedy. But it seems as though, dear God, that they're placing their faith in you and they're marching forward. So please help them to just let the light shine, because the world is now looking at them, and may they show the life of Christ. And Father, now as we contemplate the mind of an atheist, someone who says you don't exist, help us to know how to talk with these people, how to relate to them, and how to bring them into a knowledge of the truth that they might be saved. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. Okay, I kind of mentioned this last week that I got this from atheistrepublic.com, a list of what they say are 10 common myths about atheists. So I wanted to go through these because we don't want to misrepresent anyone. We don't help ourselves. We don't help the cause of truth when we misrepresent someone. And even if someone says, I'm not that way, and they are, what point is it in continuing to argue about it? You know, go on to something else. The book of Titus especially and 2 Timothy both talk about not arguing about words and things like that. So if someone says he or she believes a certain way or whatever, then okay, fine. Let's just continue to talk about what really matters here. In this case, we're talking about the existence of God. So I want to put these before you, and you'll notice I left some space between each point so that we could you could write down some things. Okay, so here's what they say are myths. Number one is, atheists believe everything came from nothing. In other words, they're arguing we don't believe that. The truth is, some do and some don't. Probably the majority would say they don't believe that. Here's how an atheist said it. When asked about the universe, most atheists simply stop somewhere along the lines of, the evidence suggests the universe began expanding approximately 13.77 billion years ago. Beyond that, I'm fine with, I don't know. I don't need to know. I do not believe the universe came from nothing in the way theists use the word. Okay, well, you know, they will tell you that you can have a vacuum and these little quarks or whatever it is will just be popping in and out of existence. So that even when it seems like there's nothing there, there actually is something. And what they will say is the entire universe, and think about what he just said, this atheist. You know, here we are on the earth. And he said, and he meant this in any direction, that 13.7 billion years ago, the universe began expanding. And what they will tell you, just look at a dot. Is there a dot on my handout anywhere, a period? You see one? They will say that the entire universe, all of this here, with how many stars and galaxies and how much matter is out there, it was all condensed down into the size of a period. So that is something, isn't it? But to me, from all practical purposes, that's practically nothing.
And where did they get that?
Yeah. Well, that's where he said, I don't know. And he said, I don't need to know. So
he doesn't need to know where it came from?
He doesn't. Well, I think he wants to know, but to him it's just a matter of curiosity. in his mind, it doesn't matter where I came from, just now I will be the best person I can be, is the way they would argue. We think that origins is important because it also says about our destination, yes.
Where do you get that number, 13?
Oh, well, okay, we know that light, you know, travels at a certain speed and so forth and so on. So with our telescopes and everything, the Hubble Space Telescope, whatever, we're able to look that far into the universe. And it appears that the edge of the universe is that far away. But it might be that it's even further. We just can't see any further. And so... Pardon?
So many light years.
Right. Yeah. So... I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing to think about all of material existence, not just on the Earth, which would be quite a feat itself, but everything was down to the size of that dot. And then they don't call it an explosion. I don't know if you noticed or not, but he said it began expanding, or another word they will use is inflation. Andrea. Right.
After death, there's just a lot of people that they don't know what's going to happen, and they're okay with that. And it's mind-boggling to people like us because we want to know, and we just live our lives for knowing where we're going.
Yeah.
There are different personalities that are just, they're okay with the unknown.
They're just totally okay with living in the present, is one way they would say it. But, you know, if... The way you and I look at it is, if there is a God, he must have created us for a purpose, and so it must be that there's going to be a time of accounting, you know, and that's where it comes, you know, into play. So, and to me, that's logical or reasonable as well as being biblical. So, again, if they want to say the entire universe was compressed into the size of a period on the paper in front of you, fine. You know, we'll go on and talk about other issues. Secondly, you notice they say it's a myth that they have no morals. Well, aren't there atheists who are good people that we would classify as good people? And I think we can say that. That's true. But it's also true that what you and I call immoral, or what the Bible would call sinful or whatever, they simply say it's not immoral, therefore we have morals. Okay? Like with homosexuality. You know, the typical atheist has no problem with same-sex marriage or relationships or homosexuality at all. To him, that's, as long as two people are committed to one another and there's love, there's no immorality there.
It's part of life.
It's what?
It's just part of life.
Yeah. So if an atheist either endorses that or lives that life, in his mind he's not immoral because there's nothing wrong with it. The same thing would be the case with abortion. Or I even learned on atheistrepublic.com pornography. And actually they had an article about that, and several atheists didn't like this guy saying this, and they kind of called him into question on that. But he was trying to say some good things about it, and after people jumped all over him, he says, well, at least we can say we're open. You know, we're not closed like you people. We're open to the possibility of it being good. So see what I'm saying? It's I can embrace immorality, but say it's not immoral because I think it's okay, it's good. You know, and there's a... look at Isaiah 5. And could someone read 20 through 21 for me? Just raise your hand if you got it. Phil.
Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe to men mighty in drinking wine, Woe to men valiant for mixing intoxicating drink.
Okay, how about 21 and, or 22 and 23?
Who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man?
Okay, how about 18 and 19? I'm missing the verses. Let me.
Woe to those who draw iniquity with cords of vanity and sin as if they were carved gold. They say, let him make speed and hasten his work that we may see it. And let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw near and come that we may know it.
Okay, did you read verse 20 earlier? Yeah, okay, maybe I just didn't hear it for some reason. You know, woe to those who call evil good and good evil and so on. Okay. Yeah, that's so 20 is the one I actually wanted. That's all right. Okay, so I can say something's moral when it's actually immoral, and that doesn't change anything, does it? It's still immoral. But again, if you sit there and argue with a person about that, what have you gained? To me, you haven't gained anything yet. So, you know, if he wants to say they have morals, which I'm not going to totally disagree with that. I think I know some. I know some who wouldn't steal. They wouldn't want to hurt another person. You know, there's a lot of things like that. So, just that's what they say. All right. So number three, you see there that another myth is that atheists have no meaning of life. And if you watch them, you'll see that they'll have purpose. You know, they'll work at their job just like you do, saving up for retirement, you know, and looking forward to their retirement like you. They have kids, they want to build a family. They have so many of the same purposes as you and I do, but there's something that they're lacking, which is what? As far as meaning is concerned. Okay, so that's they don't see their lives as fulfilling, you know, what the Creator made us for, or something about eternity or whatever. So they have meaning. Don't say they don't have any meaning. That's just, again, you don't gain anything there. So that's why I would say, okay, is that what you say? Fine, let's talk about something else. Look at number four. There are no atheists in foxholes. And I think I've said that before. Boy, if you're in a foxhole, you're going to become a believer real fast. Well, no. That's not necessarily the case at all. In fact, there's even a website, Atheists in Foxholes. Think about that. How many people have you seen in the Bible who are in an exceedingly frightening situation and they never turn to God? They look right at death. And they don't turn away. I mean, they don't turn to God, is what I should say. I mean, what I've just shown you in my Sunday morning Bible class in the book of Jeremiah and in Lamentations. They're sitting there not accepting God as He is. They're looking at idols. So someone might say, well, I still believe in a God. Okay. But they're not turning to the true God until God, boom, blast them. I mean, there's just constant references in the Bible to that. And how many people die every day, even without it being suddenly, they're told that they have a disease that's terminal and they've got a month to live. And they don't turn to God. So I started thinking about it and I thought, they're right. There are some people who are atheists and foxholes. Have you seen the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks? What I thought was so fascinating about that movie is that he was on that island for 4 years. And he's desperate. You know, there was a plane crash in the ocean. He's the only survivor. And it shows you how he got materials together and you know, managed to survive. But never once in the movie did he cry out to God, and never once did he even say, why God? Not once did he even become angry at God, for the same reason that you wouldn't Santa Claus. That's how they look at it. I see references all the time on the internet to atheists referring to our fairy tale. They believe Jesus is a fairy tale. They believe the Bible's a fairy tale. They believe that your belief in God is a fairy tale. So do you turn to fairy tales when death comes and stares you in the face? No. And so they're not going to either. So we have to revise that thing. I had to revise mine. Number five is that atheists just hate God. And while that might seem true to us, again, I don't think we're gaining anything by insisting that they do. We might think that they have some kind of problem with God or whatever. But a lot of them just... They would tell you that they've looked at the evidence or they believe there's no evidence, which I'm going to show you a little bit later, one of the things that they say. And so it's not a matter of hating or liking God. They just think there's no evidence to show that he's there. Right, right. That was my point about the movie with Tom Hanks is, yeah, he doesn't show him hating God, questioning God, being angry at God, because God's not even an option. God is not even an option for him. Okay, number six, atheists just don't want to submit to God. Okay, and that would be the same as the one above. While I think that's partially true, they would deny it. Atheists are angry. Well, I know some atheists who are very happy people. So to say that they're angry really doesn't help us there at all. I don't know if he would need you guys or not. Your grandson. Number eight. Atheists are responsible for the worst atrocities in history. So, is that true or is that false?
False, I guess.
Well, I think it's true. I think they have been responsible for some of the worst atrocities in history. The 20th century is a good example of that with atheistic communism. They've killed millions of people, far more than the Nazis ever killed. I mean, Russia killed 20 million of its own people, or am I getting them confused with China? All kinds of stuff like that. But the point they want to make, that I think he wants to make, is that it's not just us, but believers have too. Well, okay, who killed Jesus? Who instigated the killing of Jesus? Was it atheists? No. It was people who claimed to believe in God.
The Inquisition.
Pardon?
The Inquisition.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So there's examples of that. Number nine, atheists are guilty of scientism. And you're probably thinking, what is scientism? Well, here's how they define it, Atheist Republic. Scientism is a philosophy which holds that science is the ultimate truth and that science is the only way to truth. But preferring science to superstition doesn't mean science is always correct. I think what he really should have said was scientists. Science simply means knowledge. So facts are facts. But scientists are like you and I, they can be wrong. Scientists are humans, and see there he uses scientists, and can make mistakes like anyone else. Yes. However, the methodology of science does not work. Does work. That doesn't mean science is the only way to truth. It just means it's an effective method of attaining natural truth. Well, actually, I have to disagree with him on that. Most atheists do believe that science is the only form of discovering truth. I've had discussions with them. In fact, I had one with on the church's website, a lengthy one. It went on for months and months, and that's what he was arguing. Is that science is the only way to discover truth? And I asked him, I said, well, what about history? Because that's what the Bible is a historical document, and other things like that. But okay, so they want to say they don't believe in scientism or whatever. All right. Now, number 10, I actually found to be kind of refreshing. This guy said, atheists are all rational and logical. And here's what he said. This is one I hear mostly from other atheists. And he's right. They're atheists are the ones who will say that. We're the ones who just have belief, as though that's not something credible. and we're the logical and reasonable ones. Okay, so he continued. Some atheists like to consider themselves more rational than theists and ask why we should call ourselves atheists at all, as opposed to calling ourselves rationalists or some other such term. But all atheists are not rational. Atheism is simply the lack of belief in deities. There are atheists who believe in homeopathy, ancient aliens, 9/11 conspiracy theories, and a host of other completely irrational ideas unsupported by any stretch of logic. Just because someone arrived at the rational non-belief in deities does not mean that they are rational about everything else. Okay, so I'm kind of glad he said that, because I think he's right. They come up with some weird ideas just like anybody else does in life. And in my opinion, evolution is one of those, but we won't get into that. So anyways, my point in bringing all of that up is just to say, okay, when you're talking with someone, because I've been guilty of this, I'll freely admit, you don't want to misrepresent them. Don't accuse them of holding a position that they don't hold. Because all you do is end up discrediting yourself, and you end up discrediting your position. If they say, this is the way I believe, why sit there and argue with them? Just say, okay, let's look at what you do say, or what we believe, and let's go from there. In my opinion, that's the best way to go. Now, I told you also last week, and actually we started on this first one, that I wanted to cover some questions, to be exact, 100 questions from atheists, and this I also found on atheistrepublic.com. And this is interesting. This is eye-opening to see how it is that they think. Okay, well, spouses have come in, but you're all one, so you can share one sheet. Okay. No, everyone's got one. Thank you, though. Okay. So here's the first question. If there is a God, why is there no compelling evidence for his existence? That's the first question these guys present to you and I. All right, so let's think about that. When you read that, what's the first... I mean, how does that affect you? What comes into your mind?
There is compelling evidence, but they don't believe it.
Okay.
So how can you have a chat with them if the basis for your compelling evidence is something that they're not going to accept?
What is meant by compelling?
Who said that?
What is
Gene. Okay.
By compelling.
Okay. That was the for letter A. That's what I came up with. Is what would they consider as compelling evidence? Because in my mind, there's plenty of it. But they look at the same evidence and think that's not compelling for the existence of God. So. You need to ask a person, what would you consider as compelling evidence? What would you have to see or read or whatever? What would you have to have presented before you that you would say qualifies as compelling evidence?
History.
Pardon?
History.
Okay. So like what? Like what kind of history? Yeah, I mean, that's what they would say is ultimately is anything that you're going to bring up, they're going to say that's not compelling. So I want to ask them, what do you consider to be compelling? What would have to happen that you look at it and say, you know what, there is a God?
Well,
See, so that's so we need to turn that. See, sometimes one tactic in talking with someone is, okay, I'll grant your position. Now turn it. I don't want to use the word against because I don't want us to be adversarial. We need to be patient and kind and all that kind of stuff. But okay, so you say there's no compelling evidence. Well, what would qualify in your mind as compelling? You were going to say something, Gene?
Coming from their point of view, it sounds like if science could prove there was a God, they would believe it.
Yeah, they would want some kind of empirical evidence, something they can see, they can touch. In other words, it's almost like they're saying, I need to see him before I can believe he exists. But if that's the case, aren't there a whole lot of other things that we can't see that we believe exists?
Air.
Okay.
Air.
Gravity, okay. I'll let you two decide which one goes first.
Well, they're not asking for evidence. They say, why doesn't it exist?
Why doesn't what?
Why doesn't the evidence exist? They're not asking for evidence. And that's really, like, I think by using the word evidence, they're trying to make you search for the evidence that will convince them, but that's not what they're asking. The way it's worded, they're
just saying there's no evidence.
Already, that there
right.
is no such thing as compelling evidence.
Right.
And therefore, there's nothing you can do to the other.
Right.
Worded it in a way that is biased and it's trapping you into feeling flustered, like, well I don't have all the answers, so I can't answer that. I can't encounter you. And so I do like the idea of focusing on what do you mean by that? Because you have to change the discussion. You have to change the angle and force them to come up with the definition of their own terms.
Yeah. And see, that's part of a tactic of debating, and you have to be aware of it, like you're saying. It's like with evolution. They refer... You got something there, Phil?
No.
Oh, okay. So, evolution. They don't... You know, we say they call it the theory of evolution. Technically, they do not. To them, the theory is, because I sometimes will hear Christians say, well, evolution is just a theory, even they will admit that. No, they don't. What they admit is that we evolved is a fact. We're here. How evolution happened is the theory. So that's just where you kind of have to try and, you have to listen to them and say, okay, what is it exactly you're saying? Like how you're doing this here. And so, you know, I want to know also is why, oops, trying to pull the wrong end there. Why does the universe not qualify as compelling evidence? Okay. What you know, talk about that. And of course I also want to interject, why does the existence of Jesus not qualify? Because, you know, that's where we're going to start getting into the Bible now. Is the Bible a trustworthy, reliable source? Is it credible is the word I'm looking for? If it is, then we have to deal with Jesus. And, of course, what they're going to seek to do is to discredit the Bible. And a lot of what you hear them saying about the Bible. In fact, today I just bought a book, paperback, it needs to be mailed to me, but I also got the Kindle version of it, so I got it for free, that an atheist is seeking to give you, let me get the title here, if you can hang on 1 second. Is it okay for the teacher of a class to look at his phone?
Apparently.
Apparently, that's right. Okay, so I'm waiting for my mail to update, but I don't know if it's okay. We're so far from the router that I don't know if it's going to update or not. Anyways, he's trying to summarize the Bible. And his bias is interesting. So if I can get that later, I'll try and get it for her. Or maybe by the time we meet next week, I'll have the book. Okay, second question. Who is the creator of God? Now, why would they ask that question?
Well, we say the universe has to come from somewhere. They just add to that and say, okay, where does God come from?
That's right. So what I was trying to do, in addition to what Tracy mentioned earlier, with the first question is to take their argument and put it back to them. Well, they do the same thing. Okay. It's usually kind of at the point where in their discussions with believers, with theists, that they, I think, feel silenced because it's hard for them to explain the existence of the universe. You know, where did all this material come from? Even that little tiny dot that I was talking about before, where did it come from? And why did it suddenly, over 13 billion years ago, expand? Of course, if you read further, they say it expanded and, you know, there's the Big Bang and there's going to be the Big Crunch. And then it will do it again. It just, for all eternity, just keeps on doing that. So, but that's right, Gene. What they're doing is they're turning our argument against us. So, if I can find my pen here, there it is. This is how I seek to deal with that. I'm trying to think of how. Can I see your hand out for a minute? I'm going to see how I have it laid out. Okay, I see now. All right, so you see there, you know, I already mentioned that this is an attempt to use one of our arguments against us. Now, the uncaused first cause, do you understand what that is saying? They would both say there has to be something that started it all, which itself was not acted upon to be in existence.
Well, we say that's God.
Yeah.
Right. So, in other words, you know, you're not going to get something unless something has brought it into existence. So there has to be something that causes everything else, and it itself makes it the first cause. It's the first thing that has existed, and itself is uncaused. Nothing caused it to come into existence. Okay, so. What do I have next on your paper there?
Which came first, mind or matter?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if someone introduced this to me or not, but I think I came up with this in high school. I want to say on my own, but that sounds kind of arrogant, so I don't really take me for that. But as I'm listening in my science classes to what they're saying, I'm thinking, okay, of everything that exists, it's either matter or mind. And, you know, using those two words, because they both start with M, kind of makes it rhyme good, okay? Not rhyme, but anyways, makes them fit together good. So everything is either matter or mind, or some things are both. Like, can you think of anything that is both matter and mind? There you go, Larry. Us, humans. You know, we're matter, no doubt about it. If you're not sure, I'll come over and slap you and you'll know that you're definitely matter. Okay, but you have a mind, you think, you reason. Okay, One atheist just simply believes, and that would probably all come down to this, I would say, but I've just heard one actually verbalize this, that your thoughts are nothing more than chemical reactions in your brain. That's all that it is. Nothing more. And I just find that hard to believe that they would think that. So really what this is, see, did I state it as which came first?
Mind or matter.
Or you've heard the other question, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
How do you answer that question?
The chicken did.
The chicken did. Because how are you going to get an egg without a chicken, right? So you at some point in time, boom, there's a chicken. There has to be. All right, well, which one of these caused the other? Let me see your handout again there, Phil.
Why did that necessarily? Why did one have to cause the other?
Well, because the atheist argues this, there's always been matter.
That doesn't make sense scientifically.
And we say mind has always existed, or God. It's another way of saying God. So, here's how I put it, how I thought about it today. No, how I thought about it in the early 70s. Does matter show evidence of design? It does, even at the atomic or subatomic level. There's organization. If there wasn't, we wouldn't be here right now.
Especially there.
Pardon? Especially there, right. And it builds from there. Okay. So you want to put that on your, if you want to fill that in. You know, does matter show evidence of design? And then the second question is, here, let me just do that. Let me write it here down here. Okay, so does mind show evidence of having come from matter? Okay, so could dead, lifeless matter bring about this thing that we call life?
No.
In particular, mind. Okay, so to me, that's what it comes down to. And we've got to determine which one of these is the uncaused first cause. And even without being a member of the church, not going to Bible classes or any of the other stuff that I do now, as a teenager, I was concluding, well, it has to be mind. Because I don't remember what the year I was being told back then, how old the universe is, but even the universe has a date on it. I mean, 13.77 billion years is a long time. It's almost eternal as far as I'm concerned, but it's not. It has a beginning and it will have an end. Both the atheist and the theist have that conclusion. So, you know, which one acted upon the other? Yeah, to me, this here shows, matter shows that mind has acted upon it rather than the other way around. And by the way, atheists, because they argue that your mind, that your thoughts and all that stuff is nothing more than chemical reactions and so on, just matter working on itself and whatever, that's why they would say something like homosexuality is perfectly acceptable. Because that's just the chemicals in their body just making them be that way. And so they believe you can't change. Now, they didn't used to think that way before, but that's the way they're thinking now. Yes, Wayne?
If it's just chemical reaction, then why do we persecute or prosecute murders? It's something they can't control.
Exactly right. I thought that same thing, and that's where it's going. That's where it's going to end up, and they need to see that, I believe. Now, here's a mistake that we often make. That the mind and the brain are the same thing. And they're not. The mind uses the brain. But they're not the same thing. The mind is a spiritual thing. And the brain is a physical organ. So the truth is they are not the same. Don't make that mistake. Okay, where am I now? All right, question number three. And I don't know if they didn't proofread this or what, but how did God used to exist without space and time or before the Big Bang event? I don't know if they wanted to say, how did God come into existence without space and time or before the Big Bang event? But what is the assumption or assumptions that they're making here?
Well, they believe in the Big Bang. We don't necessarily. So for us, God always was.
Okay.
So if you're going to have a discussion with them about when he came into existence, if we use the Bible as our criteria, I don't see how you're going to get anywhere with that.
Well, you can get places with atheists because many have been converted. So it can be done. But it's one of those things where you've got to be patient and just kind of work with them. So they are assuming, number one, that God exists only, you know, if there is a God, they're assuming he exists only in the universe. So in other words, you know, they would say, here's the universe, and he is only here. And nowhere else. Chris.
That sentence, how did God used to exist?
I'm sorry, say it again.
The sentence that says, how did God used to exist without space and time? That sounds like they are saying he did exist, but he doesn't anymore. If you read it grammatically, that's what it sounds like to me. How did he used to exist?
You know, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of things on the internet are like that because it's so easy to type something up and throw it on a website. Whereas if you're publishing in a book or a magazine, you're going to be edited. You're going to go through a proofing process. So if they meant that, I think he would have said, how did God used to exist? Is that how they would have said it? But I think they're just, I don't know if the guy who's typing this up got interrupted or something, but I think they want to ask, how did God come to exist? Without. So I think they should have used the word come, unless you can think of another way that they may have been trying to word it. But they're just saying, here's the universe, which came into being by the Big Bang, and now space and time are existing. So, or maybe what they're saying is this. What they're saying is, the only way to exist is to exist within space and time. So, how is it that God could exist before that? Maybe that's what they want to say. How did God exist before space and time? Or, see, they have the word before there, or before the big event. That's what I think he wants to say. Is how did God exist before space and time, or before the big event, Big Bang event? So, see, I mean, that's what we say, right? We say God existed before the heavens and the earth. Isn't that right? And that's, why is that? Because God, well, does he exist in our universe? Sure he does. You know, think about Solomon and his is it 1 Kings chapter 8, where he prayed to God and said, the heavens of the heavens cannot contain you, much less this temple here that I'm building. But he exists outside of our universe. What is heaven? Heaven doesn't exist in this material universe. You follow what I'm saying here? So we'll continue that some more next week.